just discussion of observations and.
Yeah, I would just like to have a conversation about what we saw and what people's thoughts were, especially towards entrance conditions.
Is that kind, moving in that direction?
Sure.
I guess from my perspective, and I shared this previously with some people, but I think for the people who weren't here, it would be good to share some of the information so that we're not responding to the same questions, answering the same questions repeatedly. Just give them an idea of what we learned and what we discussed so they are confident that those issues have been addressed.
Erica, did you say you're presenting at MUFDOG on Tuesday?
I'm giving a general overview of our site visit today, and so I'm just going to ask what type of information you feel would be beneficial, and Scott will be there as well. Kind of just recap what we talked about here. So I think that would be a good forum, but what information?
Well, I'm thinking specifically if Jeff's going to have questions. And we can save ourselves a lot of time if we get in front of those, right? And just share some of the things that we observed. And so, for example, one thing that Melissa pointed out to me that, and I don't, catch me if I'm lying here, but just the way the dye moved through the curves and that you felt good about what you saw there, I think that would be a useful thing to share.
I think the video sharing that the professional services that Griff provide.
The plan is to show a couple of videos that they're working on.
Mm-hmm. I think that will go a long way to alleviating any concerns that people who couldn't be here.
So it would help me if the agency representative sent me there what they saw, so I'm not putting it all together on what.
Fair.
That way, because I wasn't in all the conversations, so.
What?
So that would be good, you know, it may not happen at this specific Twitter week, which is next week,
right.
But the next one after that, too. Okay. So.
Yes, I have just to piggyback on that a little bit, Melissa and Scott and others, everything I heard was really positive, so can you maybe just list some of the things that you saw from the experiments that led you, that make you feel so positive? Like, tell me, simplify for me what the good news is.
I thought that the flow into the entrance itself was more pronounced than I expected.
Okay.
I did feel like the curves between the primary and the secondary screens were better hydraulics than I had anticipated. I know we worked back and forth on that though, and took a hard look at it ahead of time.
Okay.
Then maybe the questions that still are out there for me are what exactly is the process of switching over from day to day? How often does that happen? Times a day where you would want to do it, or if you could control when you did it?
Switching between channels, you mean?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a process. I think it's going to really be a learning curve. And how long that might take.
Also, I was interested in that because I was surprised that 450 didn't look dramatically different from 600. So if you were just going to, you know, and I'm looking at our flows for the last year, which were a slightly unusual year in terms of what went out in the fall. But if you're not going to be way above 500 or even like, you know, at what point would you bother switching, I guess is what I'm saying. Are you really gaining much from that? Or are you attracting enough if what is being siphoned off is 50 to 100. Is it going to actually be 450 out there, or is it going to be 400? Because this is 450, you're saying.
That was 450 in there, and that's the capacity of that?
The full-size one would be also, okay, just to make sure. So, like, 450, what's the point at which it's worthwhile to do a switchover and have some kind of activity that might not be gaining you much? I guess that's a question I think you could ask even with...
Yeah.
And what are the trade-offs?
Correct,
The driver behind it is what the outflow of the project
mm-hmm.
needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the project says we need to put out 600, then we have to switch over.
Okay, but I thought there was stuff that doesn't go in there will go.
There's a potential midway operation if you know you're going to be going fluctuating between some flows. Does that make sense?
Can you continue?
So let's say you know it's 650, you need to push 650. Maybe there's some sort of operation between the two bays or.
Or are you talking something about maybe use one of the other outlets for part of it?
Maybe.
Or,
yeah.
You know, that type
I think
thing,
that's
going
to be a head scratcher for a while afterwards. But if you know you're 650 and you're going to 1,000, then you know you need to bring on
the second
bay
one, yeah.
And start ramping that bay up and not turn off 450. I think it's just, to me, I was a little overwhelmed with the potential number of, you know, different operations that could occur. So.
And the issue about using some other outlet is related to what is the temperature tower doing. Griff and I were talking about that a little bit out there. Like, if this is drawing from the surface or attracting flows in surface-oriented flows, then you're getting a certain temperature signature off of those. And now you're bringing it up to a little bit higher level. Maybe you want some of that to go to a deeper outlet and not be attracting fish because it's deeper, but getting cool temperatures when you're trying to mix what you've got at the surface with what you've got there. So I guess maybe a sort of a table of scenarios that people anticipate you need it to do and how those would work.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a head scratcher, and I think it's definitely the real pro is there's some flexibility built in. Mm-hmm. So
one thing I noticed is it seemed like the dye went through kind of like just one chunk of the screen most of the time, and I'm just wondering, is that meaningful or meaningless, or
which chunk?
It seemed like it just went through kind of like in about the middle towards the top for just sort of four of the squares in the trash rack. It seemed like almost all the dye just went through the same place.
At the tail end of the, I guess, when the dye moves through, because the
dye
had moved through the sides first and then it was strung out longer in the middle. Is that what you saw?
So maybe I didn't.
Are you talking about once it's in the collector?
No, entering the collector, it seems like it all just went through the same spot.
Right? On the starboard side, the right-hand side, as you look out towards the port.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we saw it definitely in the transition.
Yeah.
Definitely was pronounced in that. When you went from 450, and brought on the second bay, it was pronounced during the transition. It leveled itself out once we sort of got a half hour or so in. It seemed like it was more balanced, but I do think that the transitions, I just think it's going to be a head scratcher.
Yeah, and out of this.
Is that what you're talking about? Like it's kind of focused
it's all kind of going through that one place.
That is interesting that all this came across here and then it did just kind of squeeze into that area.
Right.
But I think as it goes on, it spreads out a little bit and it starts to hug the wall.
Yeah. And I didn't know, was that just sort of the nature
that's
of the dye for whatever reason, or did that have something
to
do with the flow, or maybe it's a noise pattern?
Yeah, I think when we were, because we were kind of talking about that,
yeah,
it was
kind
of in that time when we just switched from one flow situation to another flow situation. So I think it comes back to giving the reservoir time to, the way that system works, giving the reservoir time to rebalance and address, like, so. It would just be a temporary possibility, and then rebalance.
I think that some of that also could be influenced by, I heard a lot of comments about flow favoring the smaller of the two collectors, and I think that really it may be a function of how the dye that entered the larger of the two collectors disappeared more quickly. Right, then to the smaller. So then you look at it and you still see dye going into the smaller of the two. It's not necessarily an indication that more flow is going there.
Mm-hmm.
It's more that the velocities approaching that collector are lower. So the dye is hanging longer, taking longer to get there. And that gives you a mental cue that all the dye is going there when really what has happened is that the dye has disappeared into the other one already.
That seemed to improve too, about a half hour in. So it seemed to improve a little bit sort of level out a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I guess the what I'm kind of getting at is that the where the dye goes is more a indication of the zone of influence of that collector. So anything that we put in, any dye we put in fairly close to the FSS would
would go into that upstream larger channel. And then the other stuff would take longer because of, you know, the zone of influence of that collector extends farther out into the reservoir.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had too, we're gonna have to go back, I think, and check was, are the parameters for the design of both trash racks equivalent? Like, do they have the same velocity through them?
I think so.
I think so.
They're very close if they're not exactly the same.
Yes, that's why they're not the same dimensions.
No, I get it, but I just was wondering if they were intentionally made to be the same.
So that there would be no favoring? Neither side would be, fish would not be drawn to one more than the other?
Or were we seeing something die because they had different? But I think, yeah, I think some of it had, for me, a factor of, I was looking at it too quickly after you guys switched, and I had to give myself a little bit of time to come back and look at it.
Marie, correct me if I'm wrong, so I think at capacity, like they're both designed to be the same, similar sphere of influence out front for that 1 foot per second, you know, that zone of influence. Of course, if you're operating it at something less, you know, we're not operating maybe all of the primary weirs, you're gonna, well, it's just gonna be less, right? That 1 foot per second isn't gonna go out as far because you're not pulling as much flow.
One thing I noticed was at the high flow condition, we seem to pull from underneath the collector a lot more. So I wanna think about that some more. The other thing I thought about today is looking at kind of the life of this model is we need to think about, you know, before it's taken offline, what sorts of things we might want to look at that, you know, a number of years from now we might regret not looking at now. And one thing that came to mind when we were talking about competing flows is we're designed to be within criteria up to 1,000. Well, you know, we might do our post-construction evaluation and see zero injury up to 1,000. Well, what if we're operating the dam at 1,200? Would it be better to run the screens a little hot and not have an unscreened route available? But I don't think you guys have done any runs out of criteria, right? And so thinking about that is like, at what level are we going to start seeing issues with like the flow separating off the pier noses and conditions at the entrance starting to deteriorate as we try to put more flow through it? We'll never get to fish safety with a model like this, but we could at least try to understand the hydraulics in front of the thing if we're at. You know, what if we do post-construction evaluations and the condition we just looked at is a total loser? Would it be better fish collection-wise, you know, assuming it's safe for them to run the 400 barrel hot at 600? So those are the kinds of things I was thinking about out there, but...
I agree. I mean, I would like to see some of that information too. I think you're gonna have some definitely seasonality to that. You're not gonna wanna do it during certain times of the year, but it would be nice to know what the hydraulics are.
Yeah.
I think.
I did wanna just add one note there, and Marie, you and Aaron might have to correct me on this one, but we can run the one barrel hot, like the 600, you could run at 700 or 800. But the whole system, if you have both barrels, I don't believe you can get over like 1,000 or 1,050 because of the way it's designed. It's just not capable of passing more than that type of flow.
Will it have a prototype or the model? Okay.
The prototype.
There won't be enough head drop between the flume and the wet well inside the tower to drive that flow.
Okay.
So we're
That's
coming up against a limit there.
Right. As long as you're going to try to meet the criterion of that 3 foot maximum head drop, you're going to be capacity limited. If you can exceed that, you could drop the level in the tower a little bit further and you could probably get more flow through the system. A comment concerning running the a barrel hot, and this is not to do with things that we're going to see in this model, but the strategy on running a barrel hot is inherently, there's a something good about that in terms of fish safety, and that is that the secondaries are going to be still run at the same flow and the same approach velocity. Where you're going to be pulling more flow is through the primaries. And so where you're having higher approach velocities is where the fish are not as dense in the water column, and they are not on typically as close to the screens because you have a lot more flow cross section. Where they get more concentrated and closer to the screens is in the secondaries, and that always runs a criteria.
Yeah, I think it is worth looking at, even if it's just in one barrel. And the reason I say that is you might be in some sort of tweener mode where you're at, I don't know, 550 or something for a few days, and you don't necessarily want to do a big disruption and switch everything over.
And is what you just said possible because of the inherent design that you've pulled enough water away by the time you get the secondaries?
Well, the design calls for the secondary weirs to be set and left, so they are either on or off, whereas you can vary the primary weirs, so that's where you're going to have the knob to increase the flow rate. Yeah.
And so that will make it, I don't want to say tempting, but possible that it'll happen, that you'll increase that flow rate, so it's good to look at it. How much would you suggest going to, Melissa? Like, you know,
I would
700 or 800, like,
get crazy, but I would like to know, you know, I do think that there is going to be some adaptive operation that goes on throughout the year. You wouldn't want to do that, you know, during the time when the fish come in with a lot of copepods or anything, but you would potentially want to do it other times of the year. I don't know.
What would be the maximum that you want to even think about approach velocities on the primary screens? Would it be 8/10?
I'm not opposed to looking at that as long as there's a commitment to look at, you know, fish health post.
Yeah,
right. So that would set an upper limit that we could look at in terms of the entrance hydraulics. What does the entrance hydraulics look like if you've got the capacity that you were pulling 8/10 of a foot per second approach on the primaries?
Dan's shaking his head
at me. I'm just following that. Chick, is it linear, the relationship between approach velocity and the volume?
And the discharge, yeah.
So if we're doing 450 on the outside barrel primaries, and we went up to 0.8, then theoretically we would be 800 or 900?
Mm-hmm. It'd be for short spurts, you know? And it'd be like the upper limit of operation. It'd have to be bigger fish.
Right.
Time of year when there's large fish.
Right.
Now, the one thing that is a potential risk or problem with that is if you were pulling twice as much through the primaries, that increases your transit or channel velocity. And if you're pulling the same flow
through the secondaries,
you're going to end up with a deceleration in that
which
channel velocity,
really
which could end up with fish holding somewhere at the downstream end of the primaries.
It could cause problems.
But that is something that probably what you'd want to do is have Aaron run through his hydraulic analysis, run the hydraulic profile with that case with more flow through the primaries to see what it does to the channel hydraulics. And then you get a handle on it.
Yeah.
Where's the deceleration? How big is it?
Well, and then Brent and I were just talking about debris, so that could potentially increase problems for that as well.
as the screen.
You're not talking about water stopping. You're just saying
it's we're talking about it's going to get slower. You know, it's the whole question of the velocity gradient criterion through the screen system. You're not wanting to get negative. Negative acceleration, deceleration.
See, the problem is you're only running that when there's big fish in there. And when there's big fish in there, that gets trickier in terms of changes in hydraulics and holding.
They can fight it more.
Right, but the through screen velocity you've just doubled. So potentially you've created more emphasis on debris.
But still a screen cleaner.
He's worried already.
Well, it's just the timing and the
operating it.
Yeah, so under high debris loads, maybe you can't do that. But that's something you will.
I think like you need it in the back pocket just to kind of get like, yeah. What's the range of the things that can happen? What do they look like? It's to answer a really gross issue, too. What did we not look at?
I mean, I'm just looking at outflows that were from a particular year, and there's a lot of like 600 to 800 CFS, kind of that in between flows.
What time of year do you see that? In the fall more when it's being drawn down? Or not last year, no, because it was already down. But...
Give me a minute.
No, sorry.
There's a few. June, July.
So you're getting into the time of year where you wouldn't.
It kind of looks like it must be like augmenting flow for the main stem.
Oh, yeah.
Like yeah, and then that, you're kind of getting into that area, I would think, where you wouldn't want to run hot at all. You'd want to be as careful as you could with this fish, right?
Well, starting to get into the time of year we're doing maintenance is planned, isn't it?
The transition from fry size to par size is pretty quick in this reservoir. But yeah, they're coming in teeny tiny mid-May.
Yeah, but something else I'm not certain on that running the primaries hot, how high you can go with those. Justin, do you have an idea for how much range we've got left in the weirs?
There's quite a bit of range.
Quite a bit of range, okay.
I think that the limiting factor would be the backwater you're imposing at the exit weir.
Yeah.
Right, so you have to drop that so that you're not just running a submerged weir and not getting any additional capacity. Mm-hmm.
And
which kind of goes
and
to
then, and then you need to go to the tower level being a bit lower so you're not backwatering that.
Right. Well, if you remember the plots I was showing yesterday, the way that we've set the model up for the flows that we all looked at today, the biggest loss that's being imposed is at the screen weirs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we're hitting about a 3 foot differential. And the majority of that's being consumed at the screen weirs. So if you were to balance it in a different manner and say, well, we're going to take less loss at the screen weirs and more loss at the exit weir, then you'd easily have the ability to increase the primary capacity. Mm-hmm.
Would that affect porosity?
No, it wouldn't affect. The flow conditions would look the same. Upstream from the screens. Mm-hmm. And the biggest difference would be how much drop you have at the screen weirs.
Right now, I think we've got 3 feet of travel for the primary screens.
And how much of that are we using to get...
Well, I'm not sure that the model matches the amount of travel that they
have
in the full scale. So. Maybe we should check that out.
I was looking at it. We've got less in the model than we do in the full scale.
Okay. Or we've used less.
You've used less, yeah. I guess we can check where your inverse of the sill is. But.
Do you have a sense of whether you expect, once you have the low pool, the bathymetry in there, better performance because there's less depth for it to, sort of like the dye or the fish to be down in. And now when you get that, it's floated right down.
Well, there's two,
just come up to meet it.
Two thoughts that come to mind. One is at the low pool, the right bank or the dam actually encroaches pretty significantly. So mm-hmm. that less so of the port side of the vessel is exposed to flow hitting it, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's a sweep along the front.
Yeah, from that standpoint, there should be less tendency for flow separation. Well, looking today, there really isn't much tendency for flow separation anyways, so I don't think that there's going to be a tremendous difference in performance there. The other thing would be bringing the floor closer to the entrances, and that could affect the approach flow patterns, and it could affect this being axial nature of mm-hmm. the approach, the incoming flow. It might have developed a rotational component. Yeah. There might be a little bit more general circulation out in front because the incoming flow momentum is going to be larger with a shallower orbit.
So one thing though, yeah. Now when we push up to the 1,000 CFS flow, we start feeding more from deeper in the forebay. And we're not going to have that to feed from, so we may have more lateral momentum at that higher flow in front of the intake. So that could exacerbate the asymmetry of flow at the entrances.
Because it'll be flowing across the front of them?
That's right.
Huh.
There'll be a relative increase in the cross flow momentum or velocity and mm-hmm. The incoming or the withdrawing velocity will be the same.
The push,
the entrance velocity, I guess I should say.
So we'll most hit that at the end of drawdown.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when we still have a lot of flow leaving the reservoir, over 1,000 CFS mm-hmm. or so, and our forebay elevations are getting low. So it's pretty much towards the end of the year when that's happening, right?
And then it lasts for a couple months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like October.
So it's end of October. When fish really move in November, December, right? So mm-hmm. that's the reservoir's down, but we're getting a lot of inflow. So we're going to have that situation, low reservoir level, high inflow. So
the fish going.
That's when the fish are moving, the majority of fish, I think.
Right, currently.
Yeah, I would say probably most of the fish have left prior to hitting 1532. They don't know that.
That's coming.
Our end goal is to get down to 1532. Seemed like a lot, even ODFW's numbers in the past, it seemed like that transition from this flow, or this reservoir elevation today at 1571 to 1532, that was kind of also in line with when we jack up the outflows out of the dam. And the season's changing, so everything's telling them to leave.
Transition to the RO bypass. You see little
we've already transitioned to the RO bypass, but now we're actually transitioning to opening the RO to get mm-hmm. more than the turbines can supply downstream. Yep.
So it's more than 1,000 a lot of that time as you're moving down to that 1532?
More than 1,000, not mm-hmm. much. It, depending on the water year,
yeah.
I'm not sure how long that lasts.
Hmm. At low pool, the turbines can do what, 700 or something? Anyways, we should probably check in with Ken and with Steve too to see what their thoughts were. Not to put you guys on the spot, sorry.
No, I can go first. I thought overall I was happy to see it. Happy to see you know, a lot of the optimization built in. I had, like Melissa, a lot of the questions were on how you transition, but the fact that we can shut off individual portions of the screen at different flows, happy to see that. But I said the word earlier, optimization. So that's how I'm thinking long term, you know, and this is the stuff I like to think about. Okay, most of the fish move in November, December. What are the flows generally there? And then trying to put that into the condition of what the service collector is going to be doing. Are we outflowing 400? If that's the case, you know, let's look to optimize those conditions, make sure the entrance conditions and the flow velocities that condition is going to be the best we can do, knowing that that's when the majority of fish are. So still just long-term questions going forward on how that all looks in the actual reservoir environment. The concern I still have is just the flow signature, and there's not a whole lot we can do with that other than, you know, maybe building a bunch of windmills or something on the reservoir and inducing more flow downstream. But I mean, that is a concern with these facilities, is that our actual signature is only going to go out 50 or 60 feet. But we're doing the best we can with that. But overall, I'm happy with what I saw.
Thank you. To that point, does the model give an indication of what the flow signature is? Can you extrapolate that forward?
Well, I think from when we were out there, I mean,
it didn't look far to you.
How far he can reach out with the wand, I was thinking like 6 feet, which translates to 60 feet. And about that point, we didn't see dye moving towards the model.
Okay.
You're talking about the zone of influence of the entrance.
And we did the CFD model that showed the signature wasn't really much, didn't extend far out from the entrance.
Yeah.
But it's the only signature.
Sure.
So yeah. It's what they're going to cue in on.
It's much better at the lower pool elevation.
Right. And
it goes all the way to the entrance of the cul-de-sac.
And this may be completely different once the structures in place, but right now fish kind of take laps around the cul-de-sac, right? So if that continues, it could be that there's several opportunities for them to get that signature.
And when there is flow over 1,000, Marie, maybe you can help me here, but I think the CFD model showed that it was a bigger signature at the FSS, and the RO, I think, was the other signature. It's lower, it's deeper, so the fish would go toward the bigger signature, and it's more surface-oriented.
It didn't look like we had a lot of competing flows. Is that what you're asking, between the RO and the FSS, right, in the CFD?
Just when we're over 1,000 CFS, right. That's the scenario.
Okay. The other thought I had, too, is it's a lab, clean environment. I mean, it sounds silly, but can you throw a bunch of sticks and stuff into the pool and run the model that way?
We sure can.
I mean, you just have them up against the trash can.
You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. You're going to have, sometimes when you're operating with a debris pad out there.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Popsicle sticks.
I guess along those lines, just thinking out loud, and maybe it's a better question for you, Chris, are any concerns with wind, and would that influence the flow very much, or is that...
Yeah, I mean, when you don't get very far from the collector,
yeah,
you could have the wind dominate the surface flows more than what would happen in here.
Right.
So again,
is that a problem with the, because the fetch is so short?
I would ask Todd. He has experience with PFFC. Did wind affect?
Back when we had our little table set up as our workstation and some totes there, we come back the next day, early on, 2014. It was knocked over and all over the place. So there's wind out there.
But the wind...
I wouldn't say necessarily it's constant, you know, especially throughout the night.
So
the
generating
currents, though?
Did it affect collection?
We wouldn't know that.
Well, since it's in the cul-de-sac, it's going to be more challenging for the wind to have detrimental flow patterns on the surface.
You've got Rush Mountain.
Because the longest fetch is actually going towards the collector.
Yeah, it's coming down the reservoir.
Yeah, I just don't think there's
collector.
A constant
yeah.
wind supply.
Yeah, the big fetch, the really big fetch is almost a couple, 2.5 miles long out there, but that's only at the highest pool.
Well,
I mean, it's kind of a long...
That's also off to the side, it's not...
Yeah,
in line with the collector.
Yeah, going kind of down the
rush
end of the reservoir. The other long fetch at Wolf Pool is going almost, not quite due north, but just to the other side of the reservoir.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's intermittent, not a continuous thing.
And is, I don't know, even if
what you would do.
There is something, what would you do about it?
Well, it's swift. They, when the wind blows, they get two things. They get larger fish collection numbers and larger debris loads. But theirs is pointed right up reservoir. So ours, being in the cul-de-sac, I don't think the wind's going to play the same role. as it does its swim.
So the swim kind of blows everything into the collector?
Yeah, it blows right out the collector.
Okay.
Getting those sails.
Literal sailfish.
Surgical implant. I guess I could add my two cents. Yeah, so, you know, from the biologist's perspective and what I've seen with the model and some of the other information, I think like most people, I come away with it without any red flags or anything that really concerns me about the entrance conditions and fish behavior or anything that might confuse them or cause avoidance from them entering. So I thought the flow stream lines looked pretty good. The things that, you know, I think about are things like acceleration and turbulence and anything going on at the racks that might cause them to avoid it. And I just didn't see anything that would alarm me at this point.
Somebody mentioned that fish had been seen sounding to about 30 feet, and it seemed like that's covered just with the size of it, but the dive that went down below, we're thinking was more like 60, I think that already came up once, it didn't come back up quickly, so it didn't, some of it didn't come up at all.
You have a question?
Yeah, I'm saying that the deeper dive seemed to hover, and some of it gradually came back up, but some stayed down there, so that's not fish, and they have a different sensing organisms, but it still is curious for me, like, what is going to happen if fish start to go below for whatever reason. It's temperature, maybe, but is that way deeper than they've been seen going with any tests so far? So we don't expect it to happen.
It's, you guys that know more about fish can talk about the, I think as you got a study with the fish depth, but I think the lowest that we saw them was in the 25 to 30 foot. Is that not?
Well, they go lower, but I think John Beeman was showing. In general, he's trying to highlight kind of their average depth.
Yeah.
Because they had a huge range. They'd go near the surface, come back down, but it seemed like those fish were targeting about 13 Celsius water in general over an average.
Which during the hot months actually is right around 25 feet deep in Cougar. So that's, you know, if a fish is at 60 feet, maybe it doesn't want to be collected.
It doesn't know that you might have not realized it's not.
There's other reasons it's deeper than our collector, so.
Yeah. That was groups of them, can we anticipate that? It doesn't seem like it, because even there was some uplift.
Remember, to be able to fit our entire range down to 1532 at 25 feet deep, that's, we can continue that entire range from 1532 to 1690, so. You know, you could make the collector 70 feet deep, but you would have to stop fishing a lot higher than what we currently have.
True.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
There's trade-off.
Right.
Yeah. The Chinook, my understanding is they can only depth acclimate to be neutrally buoyant to about 35 feet deep. Once they can't gulp any more air at the surface, swim bladder is completely packed full. Mm-hmm. And as they swim down, it compresses. So if they go deeper than that, they're negatively buoyant.
Yeah.
And then I think at Detroit, I think it was Detroit, their depth tracked pretty well with whatever their preferred temperature was, the 58 or what was it?
13C.
13C. So they were deep in July, August, September, and then they came up shallower in the fall. But I think the one thing we talked a lot about yesterday and some today was the effect the thermocline would have on those deeper hydraulics too, where it acts like kind of a lid on the cold water.
So to tie in with that, I don't think the temperature control tower operations has been pulling from like
just the surface.
Yeah, it's just been pulling from the surface, and we've been able to stay with the temperature, right?
Although we have a lot of leaks.
For all the leakage.
So we have like 300 CFS of leakage-ish, and that's
That plus the surface has been okay for water temperature.
So if you guys model, if we plug the leaks, are we gonna have to do bypass flow at warmer temperatures to meet our downstream targets?
Norm's done modeling on that without the
My understanding is no.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, Norm did modeling, and it was Norm who identified there seems to be some serious leakage going on because his model wasn't working out. So then we started looking at it and said, by golly, you're right. We do have a lot of leakage. So we have Norm to thank for that. But he did look at the temperatures downstream, and I think we decided it was acceptable. Yeah. It was within the range of what we see right now.
Yeah, it's not bringing too cold in, and when you need it, it's bringing the cold in when later in the year.
Or too warm. You know, since we're taking surface water, we're worried we might be warming the water downstream too much, and that's not the case. It's within the range of summer temperatures downstream.
It's because that 13C water was hovering in the fall, was at like 8 and 9 meters deep. So we're right there at the FSS is picking up some of that cooler water at the bottom in there. Hmm. So that might be why his model isn't impacted, I guess, or why the model worked well. I mean, we didn't have a temperature change downstream.
Okay. Justin, can I project a...
Absolutely.
I have to use the HDMI.
Oh, that's fine.
And that's all right.
Does not come up to me soon as tonight.
No.
Maybe at the shallower.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool to see. I'd love to see any video.
Yeah.
You want
a pointer?
Yeah. Some of the swimming for another reason, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, will you? Yeah.
I don't even know.
Post lunch. Get your caffeine.
Right.
So is this the GoPro?
I think so.
Is the input?
Can you prep us on what the general context of the video is?
It'll pick up.
This is it's GoPro.
I don't know. Is this GoPro footage?
I wanted to show you guys the footage we got yesterday.
So can somebody move the picture of water?
This is special footage from when the bat dropped
into the camera.
So what I really liked when we were looking at it, you could see it from above too, is how well the flow following the pier noses on this. And you can see there's some shedding on the trash rack, but it's not showing up as well on the projector, but on here you can see it just really hugs the wall.
No, it looks like it's going behind the trash rack.
And so this was
there is a gap.
This
there,
was a high flow condition. Fast forward a little bit.
This was 1,000 or 600?
1,000.
Okay.
And so, you know, and the acceleration looks really smooth, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the ink blobs get stretched out a little, but you don't see a lot of turbulence. And we got some footage inside. Oh wait, this is...
Whoa!
The board is getting
busy.
It's
getting busy.
But you didn't see it at all today.
Running at the same conditions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, now we're inside. Are we inside?
Yep. So this is behind the trash room.
So does that look good to everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Not about that.
And now we're in the primary?
Looking downstream, yeah.
And we need some screen cleaner there.
Yeah, it looks like we need to clean those screens up. Oh, it's dirty.
In this area, we'll have brush cleaners, is that correct?
Correct. It's really moving from that perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you move the camera down with the, go with the slope? Cool.
And there's one more where it wraps around the front,
close to the pier,
the front pier, the bow. And then again, this looks really good. I mean, it's just hugging the...
So is this turned sideways?
That's the floor.
Oh, that's the floor.
That's the floor. That's the floor. That's cool. That curve on the entrance.
Come up below. Yeah.
Keep in mind, this is showing us the flow, not how the fish would go through there.
That's the wild part. Anyway.
This is great footage, Greg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be really useful for Jeff to see.
Okay, good.
I'd like to just have copies.
Yeah, I got a... upload it and then we can look. I think I'm gonna have to downsample the movies. They're like a couple gigs. Mm-hmm. We'll try to get that and then
you guys aren't
hammer deck it through the FTP.
I was gonna suggest something that would not be cool and say, aren't you on Gmail? I'm on Gmail.
All the
but we can't really share
Google Drive.
Yeah.
I can put it on this
number.
Amberdeck is back up.
Well, they have a different, it's not Amberdeck, it's something else, but it's the same thing we can do our
tracks. No, actually, Amberdeck is back up.
Oh.
Yeah, at least I checked a couple of weeks back. Amberdeck is now, you know, Amberdeck safe.
Amberdeck's back. Yeah.
Okay.
So that should work.
We can send it to our child. And it just, yeah, have you done that? It just sent you the.
Yeah.
So I'll try to get them to a more reasonable size, and if someone wants to project them on a giant movie screen, we'll
I might have to do that to communicate to leadership.
Okay.
Yeah, something we could help show it in the summer or at Fiddlewick.
Sure.
Those are MP4 format, or what are they?
I think so.
Question about, I like that you showed us the inside, because are the screens in this model comparable to what the actual screens will be in terms of, and you had mentioned the word porosity, and I was just wondering if anybody saw any issues around that with those inside flow pictures that we weren't really paying attention to so much when I was walking up there.
So the screens are the same porosity as the prototype material. Of course, the aspect ratio and so forth of them is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
They're perforated plate in our model, and they'll be wet wire. Profile wire in the, prototype. So the extreme near field to the screens will certainly look different in the model and prototype. In fact, even if we used prototype material in the model, it would still look extremely different just because of the width of the channel and so forth.
Mm, okay, so you can't really be checking
so
stuff like
that.
So
what we did is match the porosity so we could get the right approximate head loss characteristics. Same thing with the second set of screens, the backing plates. We've matched the prototype porosities there.
And then the prototype's going to have more bays, with more weirds,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
So it'll have finer tuning that we can do.
There, if you look at the weirs that we have, there would be twice as many?
Yeah. It would be twice as many primary weirs and four times as many secondary weirs.
Yeah. So each one of those primary weirs that you saw there will be subdivided into two.
Okay.
So did we accomplish our goals?
No, yeah, 10 more minutes.
Yeah, that 10 minutes is to determine if we've accomplished our goals.
So what happens next?
I think
that the symmetry changes to 1532.
Mm-hmm. Right, we still have some. We need to quantify the flow field upstream from the collector. So basically, the region I was putting dye in, we're going to do velocity measurements there. So that would be something we need to do to complete the baseline test phase. And then I think after that would be determining if there's any change that we feel would be appropriate to look at, whether that's a change to the entrance or elsewhere. And if there is none, then it would be doing the full suite of tests at both four bay elevations.
Is there a specific velocity you want a certain distance out, like that at the edge of the zone of influence, you want it to be a certain velocity? You're saying you're going to check velocity outside of...
Yeah, well, we're going to do that
upstream,
to...
Like upstream outside of the whole cul-de-sac, or no?
About one collector width. Okay. You know, basically, if we were to get too far away, we'll measure zero.
Yeah.
Right? So what we're wanting to do is quantify how the flow accelerates into the collectors. So the measurements will be made within, I think, about 2 model feet of the entrances.
Mm, okay.
Because that's where the velocities are going to be high enough for us to actually measure. It's a way to document.
It's just finishing up the calibration test.
Yeah. Right. So, Justin, you don't actually have a grid pattern set yet. Is that
correct? Well, we kind of do.
We do? Okay.
You want me to pull that up?
Sure.
So one of the things before we run out of time, I guess a question for the agency folks is, did you see anything that would warrant changing the entrance configuration? Like Justin said, that's something we have to tell them, you know, under contract, we want to see a different entrance configuration or we're okay with it. So then they can proceed with all the other testing and quantification they need to do. So did you see anything that stuck out that said I would change this test a different configuration at the entrance? Is it kind of what we're looking for?
Yeah, that is what we're looking for. No.
That's the next step in the contract. And for them to move forward, we have to tell them.
If there's any minor entrance modifications we want to make, yeah.
So I'm not as familiar with this project, so I have a question about why was that particular orientation chosen as opposed to something that pointed a little further upstream?
Where the fish are congregating in front of the towers.
So these are the results of the studies that were done in terms of...
Yes,
okay.
And at the lower elevations, the toe of the dam would impede, if that was turned towards the opening of the cul-de-sac, it would block half of the FSS because of the toe of the dam.
Keep in mind
so we couldn't leave it there. There was no way for fish to get in. So we had to move it back towards Brush Mountain.
That's the corner.
The corner.
They're actually
the outside corner that would have been blocked by the toe of the dam.
Rock is being excavated to get the FSS to that level.
Okay. And this configuration was responsive to some earlier comments that the agencies had.
Yeah,
this
okay.
was very responsive. So.
Well, I was just thinking about your comment about that dead space off to the left. And yeah, you can put in nets to guide fish towards the entrance to the fish collector, but I was just wondering whether or not shifting the entrance would make any difference in the action from that dead zone.
I bugged Scott and the team a lot about that, didn't I? Mm-hmm. And it's the trying to strike the balance of having the entrance face towards where we saw the concentrations of fish in front of the tower, and then avoiding the wall, you know, right in front of the entrance at the lowest pool elevation. We only fished at higher pool, then we might have had different orientations.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
It's even more subtle than that, because if we turned it so it was down the face in the low pool, actually, just right here, we ran into this, so if we turned it so it was clearing the toe of the dam right here, imagine, you know, if you were looking there, imagine how far, you know, how much this sloped away. Well, when you move this up to 1690, now they're just
pointing out into the middle of nowhere.
Oh, okay.
And if you, so, or you could, you know, so that's pushing it this far out. And if you wanted to turn it so it was down, say, right here, that's from my structural engineering side. I can do a lot with that retaining wall, but there's a limit. And we're already making significant excavations to the toe of that dam, so.
It's a dam safety.
And, yeah.
Okay.
And if you pointed it there at the low level, you're occluding the entrance with that slope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remove enough of the slope to make it work at a low level that wouldn't also then be in the middle of nowhere at a high level.
We went through an awful lot of iterations of different shapes and entrance locations, and this is what we came up with.
Other thing, other than
all the constraints.
Pointed kind of away from the bulk flow, is you get that bend in there too. Neither of those are desirable.
Oh,
but the gain is we're pointed right at where we saw the fish, and you get guidance from the face of the tower, and then it's able to fit in there, because if you straighten it out, then the entrance is going to get further from the tower and kind of perched out in the middle.
And one of the unknowns was that curve. I know Melissa said she was a little concerned about the curve, but as we saw in the model, it's
the pre-worrying that we did on that curve, and then the model showed that it was good. But I think what you're talking about, though, is so backing up to the history of it, my preference is always to get as close to, you know, the face of the dam as possible with these collectors. That's just
themselves.
Not to mention that
what I've seen work. Then the comment that I made to her, the comment I made to you was that I would really prefer to see some sort of artificial shoreline to clean up that area that we saw, that real slow.
Yeah, right.
But everyone knows that.
Right along the edge.
You're talking about right up in here?
No.
Yeah, the very edge of the trash rack, I thought.
Oh, here. Right there.
Yeah.
Not to mention that the tower that is at the last one, there's 12 sessions pulling that.
Oh,
it's
going
out about 4 feet out.
Oh,
this
orientation,
that extra flow net is going to pull those fish in front of.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And for nets, we have to be careful because our access in and out is along the dam base road, right? So we can't impede being able to transport fish out of the reservoir down to the release site.
And which net would do, you're saying, Scott?
You'd have to use a gate or something. It would be a pain.
Yeah.
And something with the bathymetry, you know, nets, is it a full depth net or partial, you know? So
right.
We were putting anchor points on the FSS, so in the future, if we need guide nets, we can add them. But it really complicates things. So we want to see, does it work without them?
Mm-hmm.
They are a pain. I mean, it would be a pain. You know, going through a gate and having to deal with that would be difficult.
Would you expect to
line close by? So that helps compared to some other collectors or
that?
Yes.
With this.
And so at lower elevations, that shoreline will work well. As we get higher pool, it's less of a guide. So
the entrance mods, is there anything you wanted to take a look at changing from the entrance mods?
I don't think so. I didn't see anything that jumped out at me. I was actually pleasantly surprised. I didn't think it was going to look as good as dust.
I told you it would be.
Yeah. Everybody write it down. Scott was right.
Make sure all the P's are right.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott, you can have a cookie.
Only one.
Anything more? It's 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
No, I think
I'm a little worried about turning a car in and how many hours that'll take.
Were you Avis or Budget?
Budget.
Yeah, sorry.
Let them deal with it.
We gotta make sure that gives our paperwork.
That's the one, yeah.
I don't know. It's a little. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they're that good yet.
Just treat it like it's after hours, is what I'm suggesting.
Right.
Run in.
They had like 5 or 6 people there.
I wanted to say
thank you really quickly to everybody who's here from the Corps, from the VFW, and for asking questions that some of us didn't know the answer to until they were asked. So thanks for asking those questions and thanks for answering them so patiently when you know, you guys, many of you have been through a lot of iterations with Melissa's, and you're all working together, and some of us have only come along later, and you still need to understand what happened. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that, both out on the model answering our questions and here.
Well, we really appreciate your coming up and looking at it and giving us your feedback, so thank you for that.
Yeah, we'll try to, like you said, share pictures and everything then too that come out.
Big thanks to our hosts.
Yes.
Yes. And the young lady that works reception, she is lovely.
Lori.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have had clients before that have told us that they call if they are feeling low, to hear her answer the phone.
That's awesome.
But if anyone, you sleep on it and think of questions or other things,
that's too late.
Next Tuesday is the cutoff.